All right, everybody. Wow. You know what? This is like 2 days after deposing Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. And I was just thinking about everybody's trying to figure out what Trump's trying to, you know, he wants to be king. And they're going, you know what? On some level, I think they may be right on some level. Only problem is he has no intention of being the king of America. You know what would be far more interesting and wonderful? I think he would love to take on the challenge of governing someplace like Venezuela, which feels newer, younger, far more dynamic. Let me tell you, nothing is more amazing than a country who has just come out of socialism, who hates it with a venom now, and wants liberty and freedom and things like that. Oh my gosh. I would be the first one to say, you know what, if you gave me the opportunity, I'd pack up. Well, I'd try to talk somebody else to packing me up. My wife did not want to move again. Just the act of moving makes her nuts. If we could just be given or procure a fully furnished house with all of Lisa's books in it, in Venezuela, I'd sign up, I'd go, because that sounds interesting. The United States, for all the good it once was, really isn't anymore. We're in this existential battle because half of our people are entitled and lazy and want the other half basically to slave away for them so that they can, I don't know, become YouTube influencers or something. I don't know what those people want, really. Anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what Trump decides he wants to do after they say, you know, well, he wants a third term. He wants to be president for 3 terms, which is illegal. And you go, you know what? I think at the end of the day, I don't think he would be interested in it. America is just messy. And America doesn't know what it wants, collectively. Half of the country wants to enslave the other half to their will. We're going to have a country this way. We're going to have socialism. It's going to be wonderful. And just so that you know that we get to be the planners, the Democrats, get to be the planners. And it was going along so well. You know, you would tolerate a couple of Republican presidents just to make it seem like you guys were okay with democracy, which you're not. Trying to cow and scream down your opposition. You don't mind democracy if democracy will hand you everything you want. They want democracy so they can force socialism in. All the rich people have to get all their stuff confiscated. The Soviet Union fell apart after only existing for 70 years, basically, because there's only so much you can do by just taking out all the riches. It depends how rich you were. The problem with Venezuela, the reason why socialism wasn't working very well after just 30 years, was that they weren't very rich to begin with. They were starting to get wealthy. It was starting to get rich. You didn't have very many rich people. And they jumped the gun. if they would have waited another 20 or 30 years and really established a really amazing wealthy class, that socialism could then come in and rape and pillage. Then it might have lasted a little bit longer. It was already falling apart anyway. All of the dreams and promises of you know, sharing the wealth. That's what the socialists always say. We're going to share the wealth. And you go, you know what? They never do. It's a dodge. It is a way for one group of people to destroy the ruling class, then become the ruling class. Nicolas Maduro did not eat as bad as his countrymen did. It wasn't socialism, otherwise he would have. And then he would have had the incentive to do something better. But he didn't, because he got to eat well off of socialism. You know, the government takes everything, takes all the natural resources, stuff like that. And then the leader of the revolution, the leader of the government, enjoys a lifestyle of a king. And he has his cronies that help him keep in power and keep people working, which is what you have to do in socialism. You actually have to force people to slave away, and of course, they don't slave away very productively. You need a ton of people who you can twist into doing things. You ultimately bring back a form of capitalism like China has to give people incentive to work hard. Otherwise, they're not interested. After a while, doesn't matter how beautiful the rhetoric sounds, if you're starving, but yet you're expected to go out and work 12 hours a day and worship your, oh well, he's not supposed to be a great leader, but they always are, you know. So people lose interest. And so once you come out of that kind of a system, once people actually get a taste of, hey, I go out and I start a business, and it's not going to be hard to start a business, and they only tax me a little bit, or they only make payments, and they get to keep the rest and spend it however they please, good, bad, whatever. And you only have basic rules to keep society going. I know one of them is thou shalt not steal, and that falls apart as soon as people start feeling entitled to something. That they, you know. Anyway. And so those people come back out of that, and they go, finally we can do things, and we're not oppressed, and we're not told what we must do. We can choose what we want to do, and we get to keep the vast majority of the spoils of our efforts. That's far more exciting. Right now, the United States spends way too much time staring at its belly button. Because America is right at 50-50 parity between those that want stuff for free and those who want to just be left alone, you have to fight. You have to fight like the Dickens to get it to get make even a little progress on anything. And both sides are fighting like mad and getting weird and diabolical about it. just coming out of socialism, hopefully what they'll do is they'll rip it to shreds. And then it will be, you've got a little government that gets a bit of a police force that just keeps the peace, punishes those who break the law, and the only laws should be like the Ten Commandments, you know, the last half of the Ten Commandments, the Noahide laws, perhaps. And that would be a great place to run. If I was Trump, if I was a member of the Trump administration, and Trump said, hey, we grabbed Venezuela away from Nicolas Maduro, we basically showed them that we can do whatever we want in their country, and that having the freedom to do what you like, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and I don't know why they took property out of there, but property was a really big thing, and still is. If you have some property, you're in a much better place than all these communists who want to tell you, oh, you can just rent, and it'll be great, and you'll love it, and you're going, yeah, but then I'm some, you know, some landlord can just decide if it's okay for me to do this, to do that. It's very heady for the landlord. Everybody in socialism wants to be the landlord. Or be as close to that as they can be. To be able to tell people, no, you're not going to be able to have that. It's very heady to have that much power over other people. To raise rents and then have them say, I can't afford that anymore. And you go, well, then leave. Because I'm sure I can find somebody who can pay that rent. Anyway, if I were in Trump's shoes, and I am not Donald Trump on any level, I don't have the same personality he does. I don't have the same drive and ambition the man does. I would so say, after three more years of being the President of the United States and fighting a fight and doing all that crap, to say, you know what? I think I want to go now and be the governor of Venezuela, elected, because they would elect him in a landslide, because they love what Trump represents. A lot of them want to be like Trump. America used to be like that, too. It was like, I want to be a real estate mogul. I want to be a respected businessman. Come on. I think Venezuela's going to, or a place like Venezuela, is far more interesting for leadership purposes for somebody like Donald Trump than the United States really is. Although he, in being in the United States, he's gotten good at some of the tricks that you need to do, but once you get really good at the tricks, I'm sorry, I think it gets a bit boring. Just playing the tricks all the time. That's probably one of the big problems with the Democrats is they're slow, they're plotting, and they really have their agenda for their entire lives mapped out. And they're very calculated. They aren't inventive. You know, they say progressive, and you go, there's nothing progressive about them. It's the slow and steady march to hell, but it pays really good, and that's all they really want, is those guys want to have nice rent-free houses that they own that they don't have to make payments on particularly. And they don't need to have, and they don't want property. I don't want property tax particularly. I'm very interested in those little countries in the Caribbean and such that decide that that's not how they're going to handle their economy is by not ever letting you actually own anything. I understand the countries that say, you know, foreigners can't buy and own land and stuff like that, because that's real wealth. That's power. And you allow them to do that too much, and you're and pretty soon, it's no longer your country anymore. You figure that out over time. I don't know if that's going to hold true, but it certainly has held true for long enough that it works. Having property is the key to stability. It isn't necessarily wealth, but it is, especially if you don't have to be controlled by a fluctuating property tax rate. The United States handles, many of the United States, it's not a unified federal thing, it's an individual state thing. Most of the states have very ponderous mechanisms to increase property tax or stuff like that. It's reasonably difficult to do. It's doable, though. Like, say, for my thing, my town, we still pay taxes for an irrigation project that basically is, I think, the biggest flop that ever was. The water runs in the ditches very rarely. Our ditches are all dirt ditches, so the water's always going, you know, it's always just going down and into the ground. It doesn't water anything. And everybody in town who benefits zero from irrigation, because all they do is they raise cow food. They do not raise fruits and vegetables that might support, you know, a local market for these kinds of things and give the people in town something to give us that kind of economy. I'm sure it was sold that way, that's what they would do, and that's why the city voted yay. We're going to do an irrigation district because it's going to give us inexpensive, locally grown produce. Wrong answer. Because our part of the world is not good for growing most produce. Basically, it grows grass, can, if irrigated, grow grass variations on grass. Alfalfa, stuff like that. Not bad stuff. But does it really help the local economy? No. It gets sold far away. Or it profits the very person that was getting the irrigation allotment. So it's like we spent all this money and all this effort and they have plenty of money. I don't know if they have plenty of money. But they have the income from the irrigation tax. If it doesn't help, I don't know if it helps the city at all. I don't think it really does. Or it's minimal, given the fact that other entities who use the water don't sell their products locally, particularly. They put it on trucks and it's gone. It doesn't help Tucum Carry at all, although Tucum Carry pays for it. Anyway, and I'm not sure I have that right. I'm sure people come back and say, that's not true, that's not true. And you go, I'm pretty sure that the majority of that is pretty accurate. Anyway, so yeah, is Venezuela far more interesting? And you go, yes. It says it's got a workforce that's just chomping at the bit to do something that makes their lives better, because all the work they've done for the last 20 or 30 years has not made their lives better. It's been siphoned off, made their life worse. The Venezuelan leadership has basically I want to join the band of communist leaders who get to shuttle back and forth between their countries, have lavish dinners, court each other, pat each other on the back and tell them what a good job they're doing, enslaving their populations to their will, and basically paying off people to protect them. So that means that a place like Venezuela is now back to being resource-rich, young, scrappy, very interested in enjoying the bounty that they were deprived of under socialism, which basically takes plenty away and leaves you with you know, carrot ends, collard greens, the stuff that used to be thrown away, fish heads. Everybody ate thin soup made out of offal, the stuff offal. It's not because it's awful. O-F-F-A-L, the stuff that most production would throw away or compost or do something else with, that because people are so poor, they grab that and turn that into various products. My Ukrainian / Soviet friends back in the late 90s, one of their favorite foods was chicken jello, which is made from chicken offal. The stuff that you would normally throw away on a chicken, boiled and boiled and boiled, and then and of course the bones and the cartilage and all the other stuff that people don't usually consume would make this gelatin. And one of their favorite things to eat was chicken jello. Even when they were working for our company that paid them not decently, I don't think they got paid anywhere near what the Americans got paid on our boat, but they had access to much better foodstuffs. They liked chicken jello because that was kind of a delicacy from the Soviet times. You would be eating the stuff that had been cast away by your betters. Now, they would eat chicken jello too, because they didn't want to be better people in front of you. They were publicly, you know, the Mao jacket types, you know. Mao would walk around dressed up basically as a peasant. And you go, but back when he was in his private thing, you know, they bowed and scraped to him as if he were the emperor, because he basically was. And the Politburo the same way, you know. You had to bow and scrape to them. Oh, they're very influential. The sons of Politburo members. And those guys got special privileges and were watched over better. It's just natural. You're going to do that when you have some power. You tend to share it with your family members. And everybody kind of, you know, winks and says, yeah, that's kind of what being one of the top brass of any communist state just gets by nature, by whatever excuse gets given. So, yeah, do I think Trump wants to be the president of the United States for a third term? I don't know. You know, to be honest, probably not, because I don't think he really likes being vaguely illegitimate. I think the United States is going to get fractious and terrible. I think Trump doing what he does really doesn't help that. But he's using the power of the presidency, and some people think beyond that. And you go, well, certainly more than most presidents felt the need to use. He's doing a lot of really good things. He's taking care of some of our larger problems. Crime is a big problem. The drug trade is a terrible problem. I think he wisely said, you don't handle the drug problem at the demand end. You handle it at the supply end. Doesn't matter what people want. If they can't get it, then that's just it. You stop having a drug problem if it's too expensive, you know. There isn't this huge illicit Lamborghini trade, expensive cars. This is because they're expensive. Only very rich people dabble in that, and everybody else figures out something else, which is exactly what this is. There's too many poor drug users, and so you need to take away the supply. It's just not there. I you know, will it work? I don't know, but all of the war on drugs, trying to round up all the drug dealers, I don't think has done anything. It just means that our prisons are full of drug peddlers, drug users. Every effort that's been made to try and curtail the drug trade that's been tried so far has resulted in worse problems. If people are just not going to do drugs, and we need to be good about making sure that people don't want to do drugs, there was ad campaigns back in the old days when there were limited media outlets, and so you could do drug advertising that was effective. Now you can't, because advertising marketing is too fractured. I don't know if that really worked either. Of course, everybody and their dog will say, nothing works, that doesn't work, that's a waste of money. And it's like, golly. And then the socialists, they're the most duplicitous people you could ever know. They start screaming about, wouldn't socialism be wonderful? And then they use, as hard as they can, capitalism to accomplish their end when socialism won't work anymore. And they end up being kind of tyrants. Bureaucrats turned autocrats. And that's what we're fighting right now, is the very advanced form of this kind of mixed economy gone to, and everybody, you know, and everybody's looking around and saying, wait a minute, how come only the poor people get to be lazy and get propped up? And that's what it's really coming from. People who have means are angry that they don't get to enjoy some of the perks of being an entitled poor person that can just sit there and do nothing and get a check and get free food and this and that and this and that. That's kind of where it comes, the whole idea of the universal basic income is non-poor people wanting the lifestyle of poor people. But of course, you always want poor people to have, you know, they have, boy, those guys have a nicer car than I do. They got it for free. It got donated to them or something, or there's some government program that basically gave them a car. They said, where's my car? And so they're all scrambling, saying, oh, you know what? Just compared to Bill Gates, I'm poor. Therefore, I should get the kind of perks that poor people get. In the United States, there's two privileged classes. The poor and the rich. The people in the middle usually get kind of scraped on both sides, and you either just put up with it because that's the way it is, or you become a socialist and start screaming about it and say, yeah, I'm just like the poor. I'm tired of working. The poor people have it right, you know. And they're what Soviet-style apartments everywhere. Anyway, so yeah, this is that's all socialism is handouts to the poor, but being poor being indexed higher. So they don't have to work anymore either. That's what they want. Of course, they haven't figured out yet that socialism doesn't give you that. Socialism forces everybody to go to work. And you can say, well, it finally got the poor off their butts. You go, to a certain level it did. You have to go very far to be poor enough not to be a slave of socialism. Socialism makes everybody work at places and doing jobs they don't want to, knowing that they're not going to do a very good job. But they're not going to work hard. Nobody works hard in socialism. It's just not part of their thing, you know. Every one job done by a capitalist is done by five people in socialism. Of course, they get the same amount of food as the one guy in capitalism. That have to be shared among the five people. You know, you don't have to work. You don't have to work that hard, but you do have to work like a slave. You know, socialism was nice in that it did give you days off, but it told you what you could spend your time doing. And people would go, "Well, I have a choice." So, yeah, communism got to the point where it didn't really give you a choice. It said, "Okay, next month, you are going off to this Black Sea resort, and you will go and you will get your Black Sea resort, and you will get, you know, all the celery juice you can drink, and there is the buffet of radish tops and stuff like that. It's really no better." And then, yeah, you go back and you slave away at work, you know, for 12 hours a day, doing what most people could do in probably 2 hours. But you're kind of stuck there at your factory, and your factory has to come up with things to do to entertain you minimally. Yeah. So welcome to the Soviet Union, man. It sucked. You didn't have choices particularly. You may have had one or two choices, but they weren't very nice choices, either one of them. Anyway, so, yeah. Trump might want to take over a place like Venezuela, and chances are the first rule he put in is you can vote for anybody you want. It doesn't have to be particularly a Venezuelan citizen. And that way, he could campaign, and you know what, there's an awfully good chance that he would win if You see, here's probably one of the issues of Latin America. You don't want to say bad things about people, but you have to understand what they're accustomed to and what they think is wonderful about anything. They are accustomed to their government taking care of them. That's why socialists in the United States want that kind of stuff in America. They want America to be, you know, the government to be on the hook for taking care of you. And, you know, depends on who you are right now. Poor people live in a rather socialized world. In the United States, we actually have enough stuff that we can treat different groups of people very differently, and they don't really have to intermix too much. Public programs are only for the poor. Nobody else gets to touch a public program, but there might be some cagey, rather wealthy people that can find ways to take advantage of programs. That's what's happening with the Somalians up in Minnesota. Vaguely rich people who discovered that they could use poverty programs to siphon off a lot of money while they were getting rich, which is mostly running these programs. There's always the slaves, the planners, and everybody else. And everybody else just goes off and does their own thing. America has classes built on neighbor. You know, everybody always, you know, we fought so long and hard to get rid of, to make sure we didn't have a class system here, which said that certain families would always be wealthy and in power. And we probably didn't have to worry about it because you can look at modern England, and modern England, pretty much the class system fell apart because they totally destroyed the structure that kept the upper class wealthy. A lot of people are just falling out of the upper class, even though they go, I'm Lord this and Lord that, and you go, and he doesn't have any money. The old thing that they would do is just to entertain themselves, throw parties, and have people come over and groom themselves with elocution and the fineries, etiquette, stuff like that. Etiquette is what rich people do to prove they're rich. You know, poor people don't particularly have etiquette, and that's how you tell them apart. You know, oh, you're one of the unwashed. It's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. Anyway, I think the more enticing opportunity would be to take on other countries. I don't know if Trump might be tired of dealing with just the garbage that it takes to have a business in the United States. Takes a lot of garbage. You have to throw two or three people in any small organization into just placating the required system you have to work to run a business, to play the tax game, to do things like that. I wouldn't doubt if most businesses we know of, that small businesses don't do that. I'm totally surprised by people who just don't pay taxes. I'm kind of sometimes worried that my children are in positions where they just have decided not to pay taxes, and that one day it's going to come and grab them and eat them up. I've always paid my taxes. I'm not saying that I'm a better person for doing that. I just didn't want to go through the crap of not paying my tax and being beholden to the government like that. I always saw it as a, this keeps the government away from me payment. You know, it's just like paying protection money to a gang is what you pay to the government. And I think it'd be a fantastic place if some place like Venezuela had a decade of somebody with Trump's kind of sensibilities in it, it would become greater than Europe. You know, everybody thinks so highly of Switzerland or places like that. And you go, you know, a place like Venezuela would be a shining jewel. I think somebody like Trump could do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump decided, I want to keep running Venezuela. This is wonderful. I don't have to deal with all the crap of dealing with the United States. The United States is kind of has as long as we can remember, has been a hard slog to do things. Too many regulations. Government wanting to control too much of what you do. Toying with things like socialism or the oligarchy or the all-powerful bureaucrat. Been toying with all those things for too long on the cusp of having a big democratic-ish switch to kind of make our constitutional republic into a USSR wannabe. It's already on that trajectory. It's been going that way for a long time. The people working it have been working so long for so hard. And I don't think they're going to just give up. Either they have to disappear or something like, I don't know how that works, or there has to be a civil war. I live in a part of the United States that is probably about as close to socialism as the United States has been able to muster outside of Hawaii. New Mexico has a very Spanish vibe, which is very much you have the dons and you have the serfs, and you were always looking after the dons trying to rescue you. You know, the big hero was Zorro, who was a don who decided to fight for the rights of the people and to treat the people decently, which is all they ever wanted, was being treated decently. You know, a lot of people don't want liberty particularly, because liberty means that you have to stand up for yourself. That's why people come together into unions and things like that, into communities, so that each individual doesn't have to work so dang hard to make things happen. And that's kind of the Spanish ethos. And it still survives in the United States via New Mexico. California is kind of that way, but it's so cosmopolitan. I don't know if that's the right word for it. It's so multicultural, and it has sucked up a lot of these dawn surf places that that's just kind of the way it works. You know, and it's a mindset. It's a multi-generational mindset. I don't find it particularly problematic because I think God is, on some level, a Don. And that he has many, hopefully happy, serfs. Yes, serfs that work for him. And those that don't, but, you know, live under his protection. And it's just a question of which serf do you really want? Or which kind of serf? Who is going to be your God? Who is going to be your Lord? The scriptures are very plain about Lord, stuff like that. Of course, you say, oh, well, that just comes from the translations that we get. You go, well, it says, it looks a lot like that. The Lord Jesus Christ. This is a Lord that you would prefer to be, what's the term for it? When you put your head into your Lord's lap and he wraps his hands around your head and he accepts your service and you go, I'll never be that. You know, Americans are probably the worst for wanting to be the rugged individualist. And you go, you know, that's not the way it ultimately works. You really have to give yourself to somebody. Baptism is doing what the Lord wants you to do and you giving your loyalty to him. Now, we do a crappy job of it. And that's okay. He's got a system for handling doing crappy. Either you repent or you live in one of in a lower, less wonderful planet and situation. And that's typically it. So there's that. Yeah. If I were Donald Trump, I would say, oh, screw me in prison in the United States for another term. That's not even interesting. I want to be a part of the Venezuelan revival. I think that's far more interesting, is doing that kind of thing. And being kind of a Simon Bolivar sort of figure. I think that would be far more interesting to a Trump sort. Because everybody says, boy, he just feels like a gangster. And you go, that's what a government is. A government is a gangster syndicate. Well, you can say you're wonderful and all that. And that's wonderful. And you can even be wonderful. It's the same up and down. It's the same thing. Okay, it's time for me to stop because I'm going to go through the gate pretty soon. Back to the labors of life. I'll be glad when I retire and I can do something else and not have to worry about money. I think that's my biggest thing. Anyway, okay, I'll talk to you guys later.